Welcome, welcome to PRQ Homesteading Expanded once again, where we embrace the here and now to cultivate heart-centered self-sufficiency. We're here sharing our experiences, our challenges, and successes, creating a platform for all who want to participate in this shared homestead journey, fostering positivity and unity free from slander or negativity, as it affects us all as a collective through our shared universal consciousness. The insights shared on this show are for educational and inspirational upliftment purposes only, designed to heighten your awareness and align with the high frequencies of this beautiful universe. They are not intended as a substitute for professional advice from qualified experts in fields such as agriculture, construction, health, or law. We encourage you to stay present, tune into your intuition, PRQ Homesteading Expanded, its hosts, myself, Tina, Shane, our guests, subscribers, and affiliates assume no responsibility or liability for any errors, omissions, or damages arising from the use of any information given on this platform. As our friend used to say, take what resonates and what does not, leave it. Always prioritize safety, presence, love, and harmony with this radio community. So let's vibrate higher and let's dive in today's show. So today, our guest is Brent Johnson. He is the host of the internationally renowned The Global Freedom Report, as well as the long running Freedom Talk Show, The Voice of Freedom. Brent is also the author of The American Sovereign, How to Live Free from Government Regulation, The Pursuit of Happiness, Freedom and the Human Spirit, and the spiritual book, The Voice of God. Brent is also the director of Freedom Bound International, a common law service center educating people about their sovereign rights. For more than 30 years, Brent has experienced more success than anyone else in teaching practical methods of living free from the endless encroachment of Big Brother. Brent is truly a modern day freedom fighter. Welcome to the show, Brent Johnson.
Thank you so much, Robin. I appreciate the introduction. And if I may offer a brief correction, the spiritual book is called The Quiet Voice of God.
Okay, sorry about that.
No problem, no problem. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Beautiful, beautiful. So, Brent, I have lots of questions, and hopefully, you know, I'll get to ask them all and we won't have to answer the phones. No, I'm just kidding. But just for the listeners, today's call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Out of the country is 323-744-4831. And again, you guys can also email us at prqhomestead13@gmail.com with any questions. And going forward, feel free to subscribe if you would like. Subscriptions start out at $2.99. So, Brent, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I am a dedicated truth and freedom seeker. I have a passion for truth. As a matter of fact, I've just finished writing a new book. It's not even out yet. It's with the printers. They're putting the final elements on and then doing the initial print run. It's called The Hard Truth. And it's about the idea that there is your truth, Robin, and my truth, Brent's truth. And then there is something else that is superior to you or me, that goes beyond you or me or our respective truths. I call it the capital T truth. And I believe that there are fundamental truths that exist. Call them God's truth. Fundamental truths that exist. And I have a passion for pursuing those truths. And I do not lightly sit by while lies and falsehoods take place. One of those truths is that from the Declaration of Independence, we are endowed by our Creator. Now, how many of you out there who are listening to the sound of my voice, show of hands now, how many of you out there were created by the government? Well, if you didn't get your rights from the government can never, ever, ever take them away. You can lose your arms. You can lose your legs. You cannot lose your rights. I hear people saying they're taking away my rights. They're not taking away your rights because they cannot take away your rights. However, most of you at one point or another have voluntarily waived your rights in exchange for allowing the government to take care of you. I teach people how to extricate themselves from that relationship. When you allow the government to take care of you, you literally become a subject of the government. It controls you. You were not born to be controlled by the government. You are endowed by your Creator. And you know, right after the holy words of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the very next words in the Declaration are, to secure these rights, governments are instituted. Meaning, the purpose of government is to protect the free exercise of your God-given rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and do nothing else. It is not the role of government to take care of you. It is not the role of government to feed you when you are hungry. It is not the role of government to educate you or your children. It is not the role of government to provide you with health care when you are ill. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, that sounds uncompassionate, but it really is not. Because the greatest gift that each of you has is that you were endowed by God with the right to be independent and free. What an amazing gift. That's what I do. I promote freedom. I teach people how they have gotten themselves out of being the rulers of their own lives and become subject, and how to fix that. I teach people ongoing practical ways to literally live free from government regulation. And by the way, everything that I teach, I have done myself. I was the original poster boy, the original guinea pig, if you will, for everything that I teach. Okay. Before I taught it to others, I wanted to use it on myself. And when I actually started everything, I had a payment plan with the IRS, and I was paying the minimum every month, so the principal stayed the same. And I got another notice from the IRS, said I owed them more money, and I didn't have it. I didn't know how I was going to get it. I was throwing furniture everywhere. And a friend of mine said, "You don't have to pay that." And I said, "Where are you from? This is planet Earth." She said, No, you don't have to pay that. I want you to talk to my husband." So I said, "Okay, why not?" So I contacted her husband. We had a conversation. He introduced me to a woman who became my teacher. And as I started to learn from her, I said, "You know, if you will teach me what you are discussing with me, if you will actually teach me how this works, I will take it to the world." And that is exactly what I've done for the last 30 plus years. I've taken it to the world, and I continue to pursue
Freedom.
freedom, and truth.
I love it. That's
That's me.
beautiful, and you're on the right show, that is for sure. Real quick, Brent, we have a caller on the line, if you don't mind taking a question. This is Mary from Michigan.
Hello, Mary. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing okay. I've discovered you on a different show, so I am very aware of your work. And I thank you. So let me give a little bit of background. I've been using the administrative process. So with my utility companies and the water, so it goes notice of dispute, notice of fault, notice of default. Well, I'm getting a response from them, and this one's from an attorney with the last name Millstone. Love that. But anyway, their reasons for rejecting my money order. I actually sent them a homemade money order with the a Federal Reserve account number. That I got from my Social Security card, not the Social Security number, though. Anyway, their reasons for rejecting is one, rejection of fraudulent money order. Two, a Federal Reserve routing number does not authorize payments. Three, potential criminal prosecution. So, and then that's that. So I'm not sure. The last time I tried this process 3 years ago, the city turned off my water on the day of my mom's funeral. And so I was so traumatized by the whole thing, I just gave up on the process and just started paying them the FRNs again. But now I'm in a situation where I'm not working. I don't have the FRNs to pay the extortion fees, and I want to know what would be your recommendations of where I go from here.
Okay, what I glean from what you're telling me is you're using what is referred to as commercial law remedy processes to get the matter resolved. Now, I generally do not promote commercial law remedy, and the reason why I don't is the nature of commercial law remedy is it utilizes commercial law, absolutely correct commercial law. But it does not take into account two things. Number one, that the government is staffed by criminals. Now, I mean that literally. I know everybody wants to say, yeah, they're a bunch of criminals, but I mean it literally. The supreme law of the land is the Constitution. And everybody who works for government, whether elected or appointed, it doesn't matter, they are all trained to find ways around the limitations imposed by the Constitution. That's how they're trained, which means they are trained to break the law, which means they are criminals. The character of a criminal is a criminal seeks to take what's yours and make it theirs. That's what criminals do. Now, the second thing, first you have to understand that. The second thing is commercial law remedy generally requires that you go to the government for your relief. You ultimately go. You go to the courts or whatever else. I've done all the paperwork. Everything's been done properly. What you are doing essentially is asking criminals to follow the law.
But can I interject real quick, Brent, on that? If you are using the very instruments that they use in regard to the UCC codes, isn't there another process to be successful in doing this type of
The
transaction?
problem is it's not a legal issue, it's a psychological issue. The problem is you are dealing with people who don't obey the law. Go up to a bank robber sometime and say, "Excuse me, did you know
But
that robbing a
okay, but hold on.
did you know that robbing a bank is illegal? You can go to jail for a long time." There isn't a bank robber in the world who's going to say, "Thank you very much, I'm going home now." So essentially, yeah, she can go into court. She's going to lose on the lower level. Then she can go in and she can appeal it. She may or may not have success on the appeal level, okay, showing everything. And ultimately, it's going to cost a tremendous amount of time and money to get that done. You cannot expect criminals to do what the law says simply because you told them and showed them the law, because they're criminals.
Yeah, but if you're using their law and turning it on them, then there has to be a way. It's been done. There's people out there teaching that.
I know there's people out there teaching that. I know some of the original architects. Back in the 1990s, they used to call it the redemption process. And it involved UCC ones and UCC threes and securities and all kinds of all the stuff they do today. Okay. Today they call it American National. Back then they called it the redemption process. Same process. I know some of the original architects. None of them have ever successfully been able to get what they want to get from the process. Ultimately, they want access to a Sestecu trust account linked to their birth certificate. It's never happened because there isn't a judge in the world who's going to authorize that. It's just not going to happen. Okay. What
Yeah,
I
but we're not participating with the judges in their world. We're doing it. We're learning what they do, and we're using it. We're becoming lawyers. We're becoming law counselors. We're learning the system, and that's how we become powerful and turn it around, is where I feel that is where we're going to grow in strength. And the more that people come together and start learning this stuff, and we take the control back instead of us being their servants, they're supposed to be serving we the people, not us.
You're absolutely correct. They are supposed to be doing that. So, what are you willing to do to force the issue?
I'm willing to learn the laws, the UCC codes, the
Okay.
language, the
And
bank, the banking definitions, everything, everything that's out there.
they come back, the lawyer comes back and says, "Well, this is not a legitimate draft. This is not a legitimate." I'll tell you, one of the people who was one of the architects of the original redemption process walked into a car dealership with a site draft. Okay, he gave the site draft over to the owner of the car dealership, and he said, "I'm not asking to take the car until this clears through the system." The guy decided it was funny. He called the cops. Cops came and busted this guy. He hadn't done anything wrong. He did nothing. He did everything right. and he ended up in jail. This is what you're dealing with. It's a very serious situation. It's not enough to know the law, and it's not enough to, let me back up. Mary, bear with me for a moment. Let me back up to the story I told you about the tax payment plan that I had. I spent 2.5 years in the law library in Marin County, good law library. And I was researching everything I had read and everything I had been taught by my mentor. And I researched it to see if anything, excuse me, anything was true, anything was valid. Once I finished my research, or got as far as I thought was necessary up to that point, I filed various documents with the Social Security Administration and with the Internal Revenue Service, and then I stopped making payments on the payment plan. The IRS and I went back and forth for, a few months, and then finally they left me alone, and they leave me alone. And I go on the air, and they leave me alone. But here's the thing. What I did was I didn't depend solely on the law. I own nothing. Everything that I use is in trusts or other artificial entities. Since I own nothing, I carry no liability. Since I carry no liability, the criminals in government who seek to take what's yours and make it theirs leave me alone.
Exactly. That is exactly like so why wouldn't you be able, when you do it that way, be able to use the UCC codes in regard to doing something like what Mary wants to do?
Because the UCC codes are in the legal venue which the criminals have control over. That's why. That's everything you're doing is right, but the result will not be forthcoming because you're dealing with criminals. The difference is that I understand that the psychological battleground is where you win because you can think outside the box. They cannot. That means you can predict what they're going to do 100% of the time, absolutely 100% of the time, but they cannot anticipate or deal with what you do when you think outside the box. I actually have taught people, for example, how to intimidate a judge, and there are ways to do it. But it's not legal stuff that does it. It is legal stuff, but it's not the law that does it. It's the presentation that does it. In a little bit, I'll give you an example of what I just said. But I want to go back to it's Mary, right? Is
Is she still there?
she still there?
I think we lost
Yes,
her.
I'm here.
Okay.
Oh, there she is.
Okay.
I'm here.
Your situation is you have a they put a utility bill or something else on you. Is that correct?
Well, they just, so they keep threatening, because I'm not paying them the extortion fees. So that
Okay.
what
Well,
ended up last time. Yeah,
okay.
they turned my
What?
water off.
But can
Yeah.
I ask a question real quick, Brent? Don't the utilities companies already get paid before they send the bill to us? Is that a correct statement?
I'm not sure how to answer that. There's
Okay.
too many, it depends on this and depends on that circumstances. So I'm not sure how to properly answer that.
Okay, no
But
worry.
the issue here is that if I send you a letter and the letter says you owe me $1 million, I have created a presumption in law that you owe me $1 million. Now, if you ignore that in 30 days, you have
It
agreed
becomes law.
by tacit acceptance, you have agreed
Yeah, that's
that
it.
you owe me $1 million. Now I can go collect. That's how the IRS works, by the way. You always respond to an IRS notice because if you don't, you're agreeing to whatever they've said. Now, let's go to the utility company. The utility company sends you something, a notice, a bill, whatever. That notice says you owe them however much money. That creates a presumption that you owe them that money. Now, if you ignore it, they can move forward on the grounds that by your silence you have consented. If you didn't owe them money, you would have said you don't owe them the money. It sounds like You are utilizing their service. If you are utilizing their service, they have an argument to support their allegation that you owe them the money. There are ways to challenge it and things like that. But I would not go out and draft something like what you just described. And I'll tell you why. Okay. It's not that you're doing anything wrong, it's that you're dealing with criminals. They will come and take you away.
But
They will call it money laundering, they will call it counterfeiting, and they will take you away. And now you're on the defensive. You may have done nothing wrong, but now you're on the defensive.
don't they have to send you something in writing as to why they're not accepting it or why they're refusing it? Isn't that something that is?
Well, she just said that she got something from the lawyer who
Oh,
said it,
okay.
who said exactly that. He said, this is what's wrong with what you've just done.
Well, no, I'm talking
It's
about the company.
presumed that they used it for commercial use. And so at that point, the debt is supposed to be discharged.
Well, now
You hear
that
me?
is an interesting point because if somebody says you owe me money and I attempt to pay that money and the somebody does
Yeah.
not accept the payment, that discharges the debt, but it's not automatic. So, okay, for example, lawyer comes back and says, your instrument is not valid. Now, the lawyer has just created a presumption that the instrument is not valid.
Brent, can you define what instrument is to the audience?
In this case, the supposed what she described as the payment,
Right.
okay, that payment is a draft. That is the instrument. That's what I mean by the instrument.
Yes.
I didn't want to say the money, okay, and I didn't want to, and I didn't want to say, the check or anything like that because we're
Or
not
the
dealing with
note,
that.
or the
Yeah.
note.
Yeah, exactly. So I just said the instrument is just a generic term.
Right.
But everything in civil law, and this is all civil law, everything in civil law is based on presumption. The threshold for a determination by a judge in a civil case is always based upon the presumptions. You say one thing, I say something else. The judge weighs the evidence, supposedly. Okay, and decides which argument is the winning argument based upon the presumptions at play. And so the lawyer says this is not a valid instrument. He's created the presumption it's not a valid instrument. Now you have to challenge that. You have to counter that. You have to argue against that. When you argue against that, you owe me $1 million. No, I don't owe you $1 million. Now we have two presumptions, mine and yours, and they are contrary presumptions. And the way you deal with that is by walking into a courtroom, okay, showing the evidence, and one or the other of us ends up winning the argument. The problem is, the moment you walk into a courtroom these days, okay, the entire
Right.
system is rigged against you.
Yeah.
Okay,
Right.
you can have all your ducks in a row, all your legal stuff, everything. And they're going to look at you and they're going to basically say, well, you're one of those. Okay, I'm going to disallow this. I'm
Oh yeah,
going to.
we get called sovereign citizens all the time. And they're even
Now,
taught that. Is
the.
so tell me, is the all capital letter name us, the living men
No,
and women?
yeah, and actually, this is the commercial law error. Okay. The all capital name, the straw man, is not yours. Okay. I know people say, well, you're using my name. And so I want to make a claim against it. But the truth is, if I had to defend against something of that sort on behalf of the government, which I wouldn't do, I would say, no. That number was created by the government. I'm not number, that name, all capital name, was created by the government It is the property of the
Stolen.
government, so you have no claim on it. What happens is most people recognize that name, that straw man, as their name. They submit themselves to jurisdiction based upon the straw man. That's what they do. Okay.
Okay,
But
but okay. Aren't the utility companies like charging against that name, that account? Wasn't
okay.
an account created? I know it's not mine. I don't claim it as mine. However, if I am the executrix of my estate, why can't I order money or whatever you want to call it to be used to cover that bill?
Because the system you are looking at does not function that way.
She can't pay them the same way that they do it with an instrument.
No, if they don't accept, just like if they tried to pay you with an instrument and you didn't accept it, okay, they don't accept it, and their courts are not going to honor it. Now, you can make trouble, you can stall things, but you're not going to get them to just drop it because they don't follow the law. I know you don't want to hear this. I'm really sorry to say this because I know it doesn't give you a lot of hope as to what to do. Okay. But the problem is you're banging your head against the wall with these people. What you can do, okay, is number one, whatever they say to you, whatever the attorney says, send a response and challenge what the attorney says. Okay, in other words, the attorney says this is not valid. Okay, you say this is not valid. This actually is valid, and this is why this is valid.
Right.
Okay, so that way, number one, you are maintaining the correspondence. The correspondence, the situation cannot be closed. The fact you have an attorney involved
Right.
is actually not a bad thing in this case because the attorney knows what I just said. You must continue the argument, okay? Standing on the grounds that you support, that you understand. I'm not saying it's going to win you anything, but it will drag the thing out. In the meantime, what state are you in?
Michigan.
Michigan.
Yes. Okay. Not
Oh.
a great state for this kind of stuff, though
Yeah.
I will say it's a lot better than California. But what you now, I don't know if there is anybody of integrity in the state house, in the state assembly. If you could get an assemblyman or a congressman involved, and I'm talking about on the state level, not the federal level here. If you can get an assemblyman or a congressman involved, it could also be psychologically helpful to your situation. But I don't have any magic bullets for you on this.
Okay, so what's your solution to changing this system and becoming free? If
Well,
it's so
in
locked up like that and there's no way of beating the legal system, what's the way around it then?
Well, okay, this is the thing. Freedom comes from the preservation of three things: life, liberty, and property. Life is up to you, your friends, your family, your colleagues. Actually, we're all brethren, so life should be up to all of us. We should all protect each other's lives. Liberty comes from getting out of the agreements you have made by your actions to waive your God-given rights. But property rights are the first thing I always recommend addressing. And the reason why is this: there's a basic principle, universal principle. Ownership equals liability. The owner of property is liable for damage caused by that property. And it doesn't matter if you're the owner, a trust is, a corporation, it makes no difference. So ownership equals liability. The government will look for your assets by finding your liabilities because they're much easier to find. Find your liabilities, draw a straight line to your assets. The key is to get, and the wealthiest people in the world know this. The key is to get all assets out of your own name. You don't want to own anything. You want to be able to use everything. So, for example, I set up pure trust organizations, and I've been doing it for 30 years. We got 100% track record. We've been attacked by the IRS, the DOD, individuals trying to pierce the trust veil. Nobody has ever succeeded. These trusts have been around since the beginning of America. Patrick Henry set up the first one. It was called the North American Land Company, set up in 1790, and it existed into the 1990s before it finally shut down. John F. Kennedy had one of these trusts. There was a story back in I
Cat.
th there was a
The cat story.
the cat story, correct. There, but
Yeah.
for those who don't know it, okay, I believe it was just before he became president. But if you're John F. Kennedy, you own nothing. He had a cat. The cat was held in a pure trust organization, and it was the only thing in the trust. Somebody got badly scratched by the cat. The guy said, "I've been scratched by a Kennedy cat. I'll sue." So he did. He sued. He won the case, and he was awarded the cat. Everybody laughs, but there is a moral to the story. If Kennedy had one of his mansions or yachts or Rolls Royces in the same trust as the cat, it could have been attached to satisfy the damage award. But because the only thing in the trust was the cat, the guy got the cat. The point being, if you put property in trust, you actually hold the beneficial interest in
Are
that
you
trust. So
talking like pure trust?
I'm talking pure trust.
Okay.
So you hold the beneficial interest in that trust. A pure trust is outside of statutory regulation. Government has no claim or control over it. Even the Supreme Court has said that many times, over and over again. So the properties in the trust, you have the benefit of the trust, which means the house isn't yours, but you get to live in it. The car isn't yours, but you get to use it. The business isn't yours, but you get to run the day-to-day operations. In other words, you have practical control without the liability of legal control. When you do that, you have nothing that the criminals in government want from you, so they leave you alone.
Alone. And how is this done, Brent?
Well, hang on, before
Okay,
we get
okay.
to that. Okay, so
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump through.
my point is that the first thing you do is address your property and your property rights. And the reason for that is now when you go to address other things, there's nothing they can take from you. Because, that's how they intimidate you into compliance. Well, if you don't do what we
Even
tell you, we're gonna take your house, we're gonna take your car, we're gonna take this.
if you don't pay, even if you don't pay the property taxes.
Property tax is a completely separate issue. I can address it, but not in the middle of this conversation. Okay.
Okay.
So if we have enough time, I'll address that.
Okay.
But the point is that you emasculate the government. The government cannot take anything from you. Once you do that, you're in a better position to fight the legal battles and things like that because there's nothing they can take from you because they won't play fair. So that's my point there. Now, there was something you asked about before the property tax. What was it?
I wanted to know, so you're talking about pure trusts, and we would create these trusts ourselves of putting our property in these trusts. In regard to the property, where does allodial title come in? Because you say to address your property rights, and a lot of us here on this particular radio station have done the homestead process of homesteading our property through the previous person on the show. And I have personally done it myself, but I have come into a glitch with the actual documents that I signed with the mortgage company. And apparently, when you go to the signing, you sign another set of papers that have a whole nother group of definitions in there, and supposedly give your house unknowingly to the bank. Is that a pretty correct, accurate statement?
If the bank is paying for the house, yes.
Okay. All right. So
Yeah.
if you do the homestead and you get a Lodeal title, it's supposed to be the highest title there is. All right. And should stand over any. But if you have a mortgage, then that's a different story. There's legal issues there, correct?
That's correct. You
Okay.
have a mortgage, it's not yours. Okay. And you basically have the property conditionally. And one of the conditions is you have to have it recorded, and all kinds of stuff you have to do. But a Lodeal title means supreme ownership.
Yes.
It requires several things. Number one, you have to get the original land, an unclouded land patent from the dating back to the original transfer of the property.
What do you mean
Okay.
by unclouded?
I mean, there's no cloud on the patent.
Okay, yeah,
It's
no,
a,
nobody is
Yeah,
yeah, okay,
there's
got
nobody else claiming to, have that.
it. Okay.
Okay, so you can do that. Okay, you can get the land patent. If it's in one of the original 13 colonies, you have to get it from the state agency. Otherwise, you get it from the federal agency. That's not a problem. The problem is this: every piece of land that has ever been recorded, and there's no law requiring recordation of ownership, by the way. Every piece of land that's ever been recorded has been collateralized for government loans. As a result, every piece of land has public debt on it. You have to identify the holder of the debt and pay it. It cannot be paid by an act of quiet title. It requires actual gold to pay it. Read the Federal Reserve Act, which, by the way, you'll find under the Department of Agriculture. Believe it or not, that's where it is. But you have to pay that debt, and you have to find out the holder of the debt. Now, we have tried for years. Okay, we've tried on the recorder end, and we tried on the Department of the Interior end, and either they don't know or they won't say the holder of the debt. If you don't know the holder, you can't pay the holder. If you don't pay the holder, you cannot claim a Lodeal title.
Okay,
That's
what if there is no mortgage and you own the land and you don't want to pay property taxes anymore?
okay, now
Okay.
that I can answer because I have some clients who are doing this exact thing. Okay, so first off, the reason property taxes are assessed is because you have recorded the ownership of the property. That's what triggers the tax. There are not once, but twice in the Constitution, there is where it says there shall be no direct taxation without apportionment. Apportionment is a temporary tax. Let's say federal government needs $500 million for the war effort. And let's say California has 10% of the population. So the federal government sends California a $50 million bill. And let's say at the time, California has 25 million people in it. Everybody pays $2. That's apportionment. Okay. Doesn't matter whether you're old, young, student, worker, unemployed, male, female, black, white, makes no difference. Everybody pays $2. That is apportionment. There has never been a lawfully apportioned tax in the history of the United States of America. The last supposedly apportioned tax was the victory tax in 1943. Nobody objected to it, but it wasn't apportioned. It was a 5% tax. Okay. So it wasn't properly apportioned because if you made more, you paid more. That's not apportionment. Now, okay, direct taxation means tax on life, liberty, or property. So the property tax is not a tax on the property. If it was, it would long ago have been ruled to be unconstitutional. So what is the property tax on? It is like all taxes, an excise tax. An excise tax is a tax assessed because you have done something. If you don't want to sustain the tax, you don't do whatever the act is that is being taxed. The act in this case is the recordation of the ownership of property. I had a piece of property, about 5 acres in Central Texas, for about 10 years. I bought it in a common law transaction, paid the owner directly, included $25 in silver, made it a common law transaction, and I never recorded the property. I never paid a penny in property tax, nor was I ever assessed any property tax. When I sold it, I made a mild profit on it and everything and was done with it. Okay. Now, what I recommend, because of the environment we're in, is first thing you do is you set up a pure trust. We set up pure trust. You set up a pure trust. You put the property into trust. You become the beneficial interest holder. Once it's done, the trust will submit a warranty deed that you have to sign to transfer the ownership of the property into the trust. This is important because what you want is you want it in the public record that you're not the owner, so you don't carry the liability. You want that established in the public record. Once it's established, there will be property taxes on that property. You pay that property tax for an entire year. Normally they do them either twice or sometimes four times a year. You pay a 12-month worth of property tax. And the reason for that is you want to entrench it in the public record that the trust is the owner, so that when you do what I'm about to explain, it doesn't come back on you. You do not get attacked by the system if they seek to go after somebody. They can't go after you. So a year passes, you set up a second trust, another pure trust. The pure trust receives from the original trust the property. So the trust number one transfers the property to trust number two. Trust number two does not record the property. Trust number one sends something called a notice of transfer of deed and sale for cash to the recorder, certified mail return receipt, so there's proof that it arrived.
Is that what they call a reconveyance deed or not?
No.
Okay.
No. This is what I'm discussing is not statutory in any sense.
Okay.
Okay. Notice of transfer deed basically says, we no longer own trust number one. We no longer own this property. We're notifying you of that. Now, the recorder will take that notice and file it away and forget about it. 99.9% of the time, ownership is recorded because most ownership goes through title companies, which have lawyers, which always record. So, as far as the recorder is concerned, the new owner is going to come and record, but there's no law requiring that. And by the way, when I did what I did in Central Texas and in Hill Country, just out of amusement, I sent a letter to the recorder. I'm thinking of buying property in this county. Am I required by law to record the property with your agency? And they didn't answer me. I sent a second notice and they still didn't answer me. So I sent a third notice and I put some teeth into it. And I got back my third notice with a handwritten letter, not letter, handwritten statement signed by the county council that said there is no law requiring you to record the property, which I knew. But I wanted to go through that for my own amusement. In
Right.
any case, so what will probably happen is when it comes time for the tax property tax statements to go out, the assessor will look to the recorder to find out who the current owner of the property is. The recorder does not have information about the current owner. The recorder only has information about trust number one, the previous owner. So what will probably happen is a statement, property tax statement, will go out to trust number one. Now let's say I'm the fiduciary owner. I'm the trustee of trust number one. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that statement and return it with a letter that says, "Why are you sending me this? We sent you a notice of transfer of deed back in whatever, however many months ago, notifying you we don't own the property. We don't own the property. Okay, we're returning your notice to you so you can deliver it to whomever is supposed to get it. Have a nice day. Thank you very much." Now, legally, there's nothing they can do. Practically speaking, they will continue to try and pursue this. Right now, I'm actually going through this with a couple of clients where they have sent the notice to trust number one. I have returned the notice with a letter saying, "We don't own the property."
Interesting.
And we're in that process right now. The point being, if they try to assess the property, they have to assess it on somebody. The identity of the owner of this property is not in the public record.
Okay, so if you're no longer part of the voter registration, is the state and local government still able to property tax, or because don't they get so much money for their budgets, and that and they get that money based on how much taxes they're going to get from all the people in whatever county or state, whatever it may be?
But what triggers the property tax is the recordation. Okay, all of the other stuff you're talking about is true, but what actually triggers the tax is the recordation. If it's not recorded, they cannot tax it because what they're doing, they're not taxing the property. They're taxing you for using government services that you're not required to use. That is the excise. Remember, it's an excise tax. If you
Okay,
don't.
so if you get yourself off the voter registration, then you no longer are in that category of having to pay, right?
No, it's not the voter's registration that triggers the property tax. It's the recording of the
Oh,
ownership
okay.
of the property.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay, when you go and you record with the county recorder, that's what does it. Doesn't matter whether you're in voters' registration or not. It's irrelevant.
Okay.
Okay, it's the recordation that triggers it. Everyone wants to get out of it. It's not a simple thing. Number one, I explained what I found to be a workable process. There's one other way you can approach it. I'll give it to you in a moment. Okay, but you have to be prepared for them not to comply. You have to be prepared to go toe to toe with them. You can't just expect you're going to do it and they're going to leave you alone. Now, hopefully they will. When I had my property in Texas, they left me alone. So it can happen. It does happen. But you must assume that, especially today when things have gotten more, gotten worse, you have to assume they're going to try and do everything they can to get as much money as they possibly can. Now, the second way you can approach this is through the classification of property. All recorded property is classified in one of three ways: residential, agricultural, or industrial. Everything is commercial, including residential. Okay, so I look at my property tax statement and I send a letter to the assessor or to the recorder. I've noticed an error in my property. And it depends on who you're trying to contact, the assessor or the recorder. Normally, it would probably be the assessor. To
Right.
whom it may concern, I've noticed an error on my property tax statement. It indicates this property is residential. Actually, this is private property. Would you please, would you please redo the statement, list private property, okay, or private is the classification. And then whatever changes there's been to the bill, let me know. Thank you very much, sincerely, etc. You will get back a letter that says something to the effect of, "We have classified the property properly."
Right.
Okay. Now you have a conflict, a controversy, and you can take that into a court. Now, again, the moment you go into court, it's a crapshoot. But there have been reports of people who've been very successful using this particular tactic, but it's time consuming and it is costly to go through it. So
Okay, interesting.
I know we're getting near the end of our time.
Yes.
Okay. I used to do a 10-hour seminar on all this kind of stuff. And so, yeah, 1 hour just doesn't cut it.
I know, that's why we'll have to have you back. Wait.
I'll be very happy to come back. But let me say that what I recommend for everybody, number one, get a copy of my book, The American Sovereign. It really is the number one book on sovereignty in the world. I have people who've gotten literally a dozen books because friends and family keep taking it and never returning
Right, right. And
it.
we will put all that information on the show page for everyone to get, along with all of Brett's information. Brett, thank you so much.
And please make sure you give out my phone number, 888-385-3733. I would strongly recommend whatever property you have, whether it's real property, vehicles, businesses, whatever else you have, set up one or more pure trust. Get the
Bam.
property protected through these trusts. It is the best way to
Yep,
deal with your property rights. It really and truly is.
you are solid on that. And on that note, everyone, again, Brent, thank you so much for joining us. And as we close this episode, once again, of PRQ Homesteading Expanded, remember to let your voice of freedom echo loud and clear, unshackled from the societal chains, bold in truth, and resonate with the call of true sovereignty. Okay? So thank you all for tuning in. Homestead fiercely, speak freely, and stay empowered. This is the PRQ Homestead Expanding Show signing off. Thank you, Brent Johnson, so much for joining us.
God bless you all.